Welcome to Political Rewind, the day before that incredibly hot 6th District congressional race. Everybody's going to the polls if they haven't been already. I want to give you a few brief political headlines before we turn to the extraordinary panel that we put together for today's show. United States Supreme Court has ruled that the government cannot refuse to register trademarks that are considered offensive. The case had to do with an Asian American rock band that called themselves The Slants, obviously a derogatory term for Asians. But Supreme Court, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office turned them down because it was offensive. Supreme Court said that's no reason why they can't get, you can't get a patent. And
that's all about the Washington
that's
Redskins.
All about the Washington Redskins. That's why I brought it. That's why I wanted you to know about it. Dan Snyder, the president of the Redskins, was happy about that decision. Democrats say they're going to halt Senate business over Obamacare repeal. Beginning tonight, they're going to object to unanimous consent requests in the Senate. They plan to control the floor of the chamber Monday night and try to force the House passed health care bill to committee in a bid to further delay it. There's nobody who expects that's going to work. Nevertheless, they're headed in that direction because they're still working out that health care bill in closed sessions, the Republicans are. All right, Greg Bluestein, I'm going to start with you. Let me introduce you. Greg Bluestein and Jim Galloway from the AJC are here, which is terrific to have both of our heavy hitters here.
Yeah, we don't know who's Robin and who's Batman.
Okay. Rusty Paul, the mayor of Sandy Springs, which is one of the hottest contested areas in the 6th District in this race. Rusty is a longtime state and national Republican leader. He was the chairman of the state party long before he became mayor of Sandy Springs. And he worked in the federal government with Jack Kemp when Jack Kemp was Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. Thank you for coming in.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me back, Bill.
Mary Margaret Oliver, state representative, who is here representing. You're the lone Democrat.
That's fine. That's just fine.
If anybody can hold their own, it's you, Mary.
Well, I'm
Margaret.
Always looking for new friends.
And it's Monday. That means that Brian Robinson, Republican strategist and former communications director to Governor Deal, is here. Hey, Brian.
Happy Monday, Bill.
All right. We got a great big panel because so much to talk about. Greg, you filed about an hour ago a story that related to Karen Handel. What can you? It's a pretty recent update.
Yeah, well, I spent part of the morning with her at the old Hickory House in Tucker, which is a pretty blue part of the district where she was making a last-minute appeal to voters to come out and support her. And afterwards, we had a little media scrum where among the questions we asked was how the Scalise shooting was impacting the race. Over the weekend, there was a super PAC ad that had a sort of very explosive allegation that Democrats were endorsing violence against Republicans, and that showed image of Scalise being wheeled out of that tragic incident. And she bristled at that question, said, how dare media or anyone else try to politicize this tragedy? And she echoed John Ossoff's call on Sunday night, which was to tear down that ad, take down that ad immediately.
All right, we're going to talk about that ad in a couple minutes, but did she say something about your headline? I think talks about what a crazy race it's been.
Yeah, she was also asked how she's holding up, what it's been like to be in the center of the media spotlight, the national spotlight, and she said, to be honest, it's the craziest race I've ever seen, and she's right in the middle of it. She also said something to the effect of, I never thought I'd have a hazmat team in my kitchen, a reference to the threatening letters that she and several neighbors got last week after the Scalise shooting.
It had some powder in there, but it was determined not to be of any hazard at all.
Jim Galloway, the most recent poll in this race, and probably the final poll before tomorrow, Channel 2 released another poll at the end of the week, and they, like almost everybody else, show it's anybody's race.
Tenths of percentage points, and all within the margin of error. If anybody knows tells you that they know what's going to happen tomorrow, no, they're lying.
Well, we do know one thing, Rusty Paul. We've been talking for the last week about, oh my gosh, this race is going to approach $40 million in spending. Well, over the weekend, it suddenly became a $50 million race. If Karen Handel has a point, this is crazy.
Well, it's overkill. You know, you can run an awful lot of congressional races at $2 million apiece for $50 million. And I think both parties are cannibalizing their fundraising opportunity. But that shows also how much passion there is in the political environment today. And not all of that passion is positive. And that's one of the tragedies, I think, of where we are politically today, is that not only does your adversary have to be wrong, they have to be evil as well.
Yeah. You know, we're going to talk a little bit about that. I'm glad you brought that up. But
yeah, I just want to say, though, you know, Rusty mentions $2 million for the race. I can't remember between now and 2004 the last time we had multi-million dollar congressional races in Georgia. It was probably Tom Price's in that primary against former Senator Robert Lamoot that we got those big totals. But you look at the rest of our delegation, Austin Scott, Rick Allen, Tom Graves, Doug Collins, Rob Woodall. None of them spent more than $1 million, I would bet. I mean, it has been a much lower threshold, and this is 50 times that.
You know what I find fascinating is that what's the metro? What's North Georgia? What's the population of Metro Atlanta? Between five and six. 5 and 6 million. That's what I thought. Okay, so and of that, how many people are in the 6th congressional district? What does each congressional district hold about now?
About 800.
But total registered voters, I think, are the 535?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but my point was going to be, you're talking about advertising dollars going to waste. You're spending a fortune to reach probably 500,000 voters, and those spots are being seen by $5+ million who watch TV on channels in Metro Atlanta.
And you have TV executives in Atlanta that are just crying all the way to the bank.
Well, and it's also the amount of overkill. They don't know how to spend this money, not even just wisely. But I had a friend of mine who was driving back from Tallahassee who told me he was listening to a country gospel station, and there was an Ossoff ad on that. That just tells you that they have more money than they know what to do with.
Bill, we're talking about consultant kind of talk. We're talking about all the money that goes out to the consultants and the pollers and all of that. I'm trying to understand this race from the perspective of the voter. I don't use the term crazy, but I do use the term totally unique. This is not replicable in any other part of the country in 2018 races, in my view. The money is out of bounds. The focus is out of bounds.
What do you mean when you say the focus is out of bounds?
The fact that we are styling this as a national election and that we have a fairly blue Republican-leaning district that is totally energized and competitive on very unique times. We have never had a president of the United States like Donald Trump. And the approval rating of 36% this early in a presidential term is simply unprecedented. People are upset in a significant way, personally, the voters. And the energy that's going into this distress is really not measurable at this time. The polling can't measure it, whether or not the shooting, people want to credit, let me use that word in very distressed terms, the shooting with certain movements. None of this is measurable in any real way.
Rusty, you're nodding as you hear what Mary Margaret is saying.
No, I agree. This is a unique election. And it just happens to be playing out on our front doorstep. And the reason is because you've got a member, they're replacing a member of the Trump cabinet. And the amount of passion, and I agree, I mean, the women at my house, the biggest mistake I made as a father, having been Father's Day, was teaching my kids to think for themselves rather than to think like me. And my daughters are beside themselves. And we have very passionate discussions about the political state today. And I thought Jim's column over the weekend captured the challenge that we have in political discourse today. I've got a lot. Mary Margaret and I are friends. We actually go to church together. We're at the altar with wine and bread on Sundays occasionally. and I don't agree with her on very much. But we can still have civil conversations, and I see her viewpoints and I'm not sure she sees mine, but...
Rusty's a competent mayor. He's running a sophisticated entity. He's a responsible political player. I don't in any way would ever say anything personally negative about him.
Well, I mean, that's good because he's got to qualify in August for re-election in November. Is he going to count on your endorsement?
She would never do that to him. So, she's a friend.
Jim Galloway, Rusty mentions your column over the weekend, and we talked about it on Friday's show, and you did, as he said, talked about the difference between, it used to be you could be the loyal opposition, now you're the enemy.
And it's we've already talked about this before. I mean, yeah, you have to be the enemy. But the thing is, when you call someone your enemy, when you call somebody an enemy of the people, when you call somebody a traitor to his country, what you're not just labeling them. You're giving yourself all sorts of license to do things that you wouldn't normally do.
With that in mind, we already mentioned it briefly, and I really thought, over the weekend, I was reading Political Insider. Greg, did you post about this commercial? Was it your post? I almost couldn't finish reading the post because the language startled me so much, offended me so much. And I thought about whether we ought to play it on the air today. And then this morning, I learned through the Washington Post that it is getting airtime. The Fox News channel nationally is playing it in their local breaks here. Who's the organization? This is a PAC ad, a very little-known PAC.
It's a PAC called the Principled Conservative. I think that's what it was called. And it had, you know, just a few hundred followers on Twitter. It had very little web presence. But it is known for these types of ads late in the game.
Let's play it. And we're not endorsing it, obviously.
Now the unhinged left is endorsing and applauding shooting Republicans. When will it stop? It won't if John Ossoff wins on Tuesday, because the same unhinged leftists cheering last week's shooting are all backing John Ossoff. And if he wins, they win. Stop them. Stop them now. Stop John Ossoff. Stop Nancy Pelosi. Vote Karen Handel for Congress. Vote Principled Leadership Project PAC. Paid for this ad and is solely responsible for its content.
So, Brian, I play that spot because people should know what each side is putting out there. And we should say the first pictures we see are those of Steve Scalise, who was badly wounded, being carried off the baseball field.
It's interesting. I've watched it on the post when Greg put it up there on YouTube. It was you can find it on YouTube. But listening to it just right now, the thing that stands out are the gunshots.
Absolutely. Who is that ad for? Who is influenced by that ad? If you're a Republican leader in this state and you want to influence part of your base, you're saying a lot about yourself to put that ad out there.
I don't think it's effective, not because it's offensive, because as a political consultant, I can tell you that sometimes offensive is effective. And I don't think that this is, partly because of what Rusty said, we are past the point of saturation, that there's not a message that's going to sink in the weekend before the election. Plus, the vast majority of voters have already cast their ballot.
But we don't want to measure the effectiveness of that commercial. We want to talk about the content of that commercial, don't we?
I want to answer Mary Margaret's question.
Oh, okay,
though.
That makes sense. Gotcha.
Who's it for?
And that's my question too, Mary Margaret, because the people who are going to think, that's right, leftists want to shoot us, and if we elect John Ossoff, we're all going to get shot. If you believe that, you're already voting for Karen Handel. You're already a motivated voter. Your vote's already been cast. Your most diehard people that is targeted at are not going to sit out this election. No one anywhere in this region isn't aware that this is going on tomorrow.
Is it for the gun? Did the gun lobby pay for that? It's about guns.
Well, Mary Margaret, let me tell you what that ad is about. It is not about influencing this election. It is about an organization that gets a certain amount of coverage that can now go out and raise money to further their... This is about raising money. And they are targeting some of the fringe folks out there who will write checks. This is about fundraising, not really this election. And I salute Karen and John Ossoff both for repudiating
it. It's a totally
it.
Irresponsible
yeah.
ad.
Yeah, so
let me tell you another irresponsible ad, because I'm obviously upset about the gun part of that. Let's shoot people for political advantage, and somehow promoting that idea in vague ways. The ad where all older white citizens come on TV, and this is what's been going on a week, and say he's a liar. He's childish. He's liar. He's childish. I was offended by that ad.
Well, we should point out.
I mean, who's that for?
We should certainly point out. I just want, in fairness, pro-Assaf PACs have run a series of attack ads on Karen Handel as well.
Yeah. That are false.
And some of them have been reportedly, I mean, when fact-checking has shown that some of them haven't been on point or correct. Yes,
yeah.
Greg?
Some of those attack ads have gone back to some of the same arguments that Republicans made against Karen Handel in 2010 and 2014 about her purchase of office equipment, about her lease of an SUV, or her use of an SUV, things like that. And some of these have been proven wrong by fact checkers, but yet you still see them, and you see it from both sides.
All right, but that said, let me make this point first, Brian, and then let you jump in. This is now about the political discourse and where we're headed. And Jim, as you well know, because I saw this too on Political Insider blog, Brad Carver, who is the chairman of the, what congressional, Barry Loudermilk's congressional,
11th.
The Republican chairman of the 11th district.
Buckhead.
Yeah.
It reaches into Buckhead.
Yeah, yeah, but it's mostly up in
Bartow and Cherokee. Yeah.
There was an event in Chambly on Saturday.
This was Saturday's event.
The PDK.
Yeah, Saturday's event with Tom.
Quote,
Price.
I'll tell you what, I think the shooting is going to win this election for us because moderates and independents in this district are tired of left-wing extremism. I get that there's extremism on both sides, but we are not seeing them. We're seeing absolute resistance to everything this president does. He goes on.
Well, Greg, you want to jump in because he modified that only slightly in a conversation.
I asked him this morning to elaborate on that because it had already started making the rounds as a Republican chairman saying that this will win the election for us. And he says, I wasn't trying to tie the Ossoff campaign to this violence. I don't see any silver linings in the shootings. It's awful. But he was just giving what he said is an unvarnished assessment of the race, that in the last hours that this type of violence could help get those conservatives off the bench.
This is not where you want your Republican Party to go, though, Rusty.
No, it gets into, I mean, you cannot in any way, shape, or form try to capitalize on something of this nature. You have only one obligation, you have only one morally correct position, and that is this is wrong under any circumstances, no matter who it targets, and you have to repudiate that. And you cannot equate it. I mean, I know Brad, he's a friend. I think it was a very unfortunate choice of words. I think he probably regrets them at this point. When you extemporaneously talk, as I've told these reporters before, you're supposed to report what I meant to say, not what I said.
And we were mind readers.
Yeah. So that I only get in trouble when Jim Galloway quotes me accurately. But,
he has a habit of quoting public officials accurately.
It's a tragic characteristic that he has. But,
I'm working to overcome it.
when you're at a situation like that, sometimes you choose your words. You would like to choose your words a little bit more carefully. And I think Brad, in retrospect, would. But no matter what, if he stands by them, it's an unfortunate and not permissible use of that incident.
Brian, yeah, I know you've been trying to get in here. We're going to give you the last word before we take a break.
When it comes down to the truthfulness of ads, I think what takes the cake, because all of the offensive ads we discussed today, they are offensive, no doubt about it, but they're not necessarily inaccurate. I mean, they're matters of perspective, okay? But you say that Karen Handel used taxpayer dollars to buy a Lexus is a lie. It is not a fib. It is a lie. It was her personal car, and she took the daily car allowance that all officials get. It is so dishonest.
But let me go back to the starting point, Mary Margaret. Brian isn't really defending this little pack that put out about crazy left-wingers who are inspiring terrorist activity against members of Congress.
I take Brad at his word that he was given an unvarnished, truthful opinion in his opinion. But you cannot say that. You cannot say that in today's world.
Yeah. Let me take a break. There's a lot to talk about. I want to, for instance, I asked on Friday where Nathan Deal was in the 6th District race, and
now
you all looked at me blankly as if he wouldn't be involved in this. Well, he will be, and we're going to talk about that in just a minute. And then I want to ask you to go around and give me your sense, because this is a blue ribbon panel of political experts. What should we be looking for? Where is the vote going to really show us? Where do we need to see the turnout to get a sense of who's going to win or lose? This is Political Rewind. We'll be right back.
What makes you trust somebody? Maybe they're consistent and reliable. Maybe they motivate you. Maybe they challenge you to think differently. Whatever the reason, millions of people tune into NPR and stations like this every day because they trust our journalism. Please stand with the facts. Help us continue to bring you the reliable and challenging programming that you depend on every day. It's really easy. Here's how you can help out. Go to gpb.org and click donate at the top of the page. And thanks for your support.
We're back on Political Rewind. We really do have an all-star blue ribbon panel today. Jim Galloway and Greg Bluestein from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Jim, of course, you read on Thursdays and Sundays, and he oversees the AJC Political Insider blog, where the show will be posted at some point after we've aired it. You'll be able to listen to it. Tell your friends who haven't heard the show live, they can listen to it.
Yeah, we'll get it up there by 6.
Greg Bluestein, who is... Greg, have you had any days off in the last weeks? I mean, your byline is in
every... He had a birthday.
I had Memorial Day off, and I'm taking all of July off, so get ready, bosses.
Democratic State Rep Mary Margaret Oliver is with us, and Republican strategist Brian Robinson, and the mayor of Sandy Springs, and a longtime Republican leader, Rusty Paul, joins us as well. Thank you all. All right, let's talk a little bit. Number one, Nathan Deal, the governor, has completely stayed on the sidelines in this race. Brian, are you saying he hasn't stayed on the sidelines? I haven't seen Governor Deal.
He actually put out a tweet.
Brian gave me a sour look when I said that. The governor hasn't been engaged in this race.
He endorsed her as soon as she won the primary. He's not going to go door to door. What are you wanting to do?
Sonny Perdue and Tom Price at Peachtree DeKalb Airport. Yeah. Big rally for Karen Handel on Saturday. Yeah. Where was your former boss? Was he unavailable?
Well, you know, I don't really have access to the schedule anymore, but he will be there tonight.
Yeah, that's not the point. That's exactly right.
Yeah, he's doing an event tonight. That's good enough. We're spreading it out a little bit. I'll say this about Governor Deal. I know it will be a really fun parlor game to insinuate that there's bad blood between them. I don't think that there is on either side after 7 years have passed and since that, you know, really bloody primary that in which I was wielding one of the knives. I do think he wants her to win tomorrow. But the governor, despite having been in politics for more than 40 years, is not a political animal. He is a policy animal. It's the truth. And so you don't see him involved that much in politics.
He's not a political animal anymore since he doesn't have to win re-election. Yeah. There's no transaction that I will show up for you here if you will show up for me there.
Brian just talked out of the Sean Spicer school of explaining his former boss's attitude. I mean, let's face it. The Republican governor of the state, Greg, you would think at some point would do what he is finally... What he's doing tonight. And probably tonight's the most important time for him to do it, on the eve of the election.
Yeah, and he'll get a decent amount of attention, although there was criticism that he didn't do this before during the crucial early voting stage. I will say this to sort of elaborate on what Brian was saying. He is not, and even doing the even when he did have something to show for it, even when he'd had an election, he was not ever the rah-rah red meat.
He
doesn't lace his speeches with applause lines. It doesn't even pause for applause when he gets it half the time.
Yeah.
So he's just, it's never been his, he doesn't show up at Georgia GOP events either. It's just, it doesn't seem to be his thing.
It's just not his thing. That is the honest to God truth. I know the man at least that much.
Okay. I'd like to do two things, if I may. First, Friday was the final day of early voting. So I'd like to just say a couple words, have you all say a couple words about that, and then let's talk about tomorrow's voting and what we ought to watch for. Early voting, 140 plus thousand people.
if you think about that in terms of the entire turnout for the first round, which was 192,000, you already
for the entire election.
Yeah, election. It's astounding, and it points to a turnout that could reach. I've talked to some analysts this morning that could reach 240, 250, even, you know, which would be eye popping.
Jim, you have said repeatedly on this show that John Ossoff could win this election in last week.
Oh yeah, I think he either won it or lost it at Friday noon
because of the early vote.
Yes.
Yeah. And Karen Handel will either win it or lose it tomorrow at 7 p.m.
Yep.
Because the tradition that has quickly developed since we started early voting is that older Republican voters like to go to the ballot box, and Democrats have created a pretty darn good machine. I mean, it used to be that Republicans had the advantage, especially when mail-in votes were the case. Not anymore.
Mary Margaret, what do you see that scenario? How are Democrats mobilizing to get the rest of the vote out tomorrow?
Clearly, the uniqueness of this race has focused on early voting and early Democratic voting and voter registration. It's a unique set of factors coming together tomorrow that's going to be unprecedented. I can't resist, though, saying another word about Nathan Deal. He was a Democrat the first 20 years of the polls.
Yes.
And he also is a policy interested. His work in politics is about policy, which is a big contrast to Karen Handel's life in politics.
Okay. Rusty, you live in the heart of, I think, ground zero in many ways for the who's going to win or lose this election. Sandy Springs has changed demographically, and you suddenly are mayor of a city that could go either way tomorrow. Yes?
Yeah, no question. I mean, there are various ways to measure an election. You can look at polls. You can look at money raised. I've discounted both those. I now just check the sign wars out. Who's got the most signs?
who do you think's winning?
It's tied.
Not in my neighborhood. John Ossoff has got all the signs.
One of the ironies is that the more expensive the house, the more likely they are to have an Ossoff sign in it.
Yeah. Well, that's national politics.
Well, it's it's the rich folks.
It's the Mitt Romney voters that are going to win it for John Ossoff.
Yeah. Well, and it's really interesting, and it's going to be women. The women vote tomorrow. As my experience has been, as I say, at my house, the women are the ones who've been most offended by the president, if you're offended by the president, and they are motivated. And it'll be interesting to see if not winning it outright took any wind out of the sails for the Democrats on the first round.
And polls show that really playing out the gender gap. I mean, every poll, including the AJC poll, shows a double-digit lead for Ossoff over Handel among women voters and kind of the reverse among male voters. The other thing I'm really looking at is the Republican support for Ossoff. In the first round, he got about 15%, depending on how you look at it, about 15%. Republicans concede that he'll get about at least 10% of the Republican vote, but they think that the threshold is going to be 15% for him to be able to.
But the gender gap is really very important because there was a movement in among Washington Republicans that Karen Handel was the best choice for this particular seat among all the Republicans because it was thought that maybe she could bridge that gap that Trump had created.
And she was running for a little bit of history. First Republican female Congress member in Georgia.
But she has not played that up.
But the abortion issue is truly, I think, backfired on her. I think that the women engagement is significant in the Ossoff race, and she has not been able to use what some have called the woman card.
You know, it's interesting you say that, Mary Margaret, because I was taken aback, actually, at the WSB debate, that when Ossoff kept going after her over the Susan G. Komen pulling the money from Planned Parenthood, she never once turned to the camera and said, I will apologize to no one for standing up for life and doing that traditional Republican appeal. She never mentioned the word abortion. So it shows you that the polling in this district on that issue is significantly different than it would be statewide, where that would be a winning message.
So literally about an hour and 20 minutes before the show went on the air, I got a note from the Susan B. Anthony list telling me they wanted to make sure that we were aware on Political Rewind that they believe they're going to reach tomorrow 65,000 voters in the special election through door-to-door, through digital and other. I don't think just between now and tomorrow, but throughout this campaign. And, of course, this is an organization that is anti-abortion, and they believe that they're going to reach an awful lot of people and get them out to vote for Karen Handel, Rusty.
Well, Planned Parenthood was going through my neighborhood last week. You know, they tend to bypass my door, but they forget that I've got people out there who say, why aren't these people allowed to knock on my door? Why isn't the city enforcing the solicitation ordinance? So I find out where everybody is based on my email traffic.
But, all right. Where should we be looking? Brian, do you want to, or do you want to weigh in on something real quick before?
No,
we
on that, on
all
tomorrow.
Right. So we know DeKalb County is going to be a Democratic voter turnout, right? So we'll watch to see how the vote in DeKalb County. Who's going to report first tomorrow? Is DeKalb?
DeKalb.
Yeah.
DeKalb. Actually, I'd say Mary Margaret and I, and Greg, are all DeKalb residents. Mm-hmm. And
me too. I voted already in this race.
And I often bash our county government for its utter incompetence, although Michael Thurman is a godsend. Thank God he's there. But our voter system is actually outstanding, and I want to give praise, which I never get a chance to do, to the woman, I don't know her name, but who runs our voting system. It's fantastic. We do have the smallest population in the district, but our numbers will be in the fastest. You'll see the DeKalb early vote come in. So it's going to give us off a very big lead to start off the night. But as North Fulton, particularly as you the further north you go, toward Cherokee,
right.
And then East Cobb. Mm-hmm. East Cobb will come in second because it's the next biggest population, and Cobb's got a pretty good. And then Fulton, of course, has had legions of voting problems. But if at the end of the voting, early voting reports, so sometime I guess around 8 maybe, if Karen Handel is within spitting distance, she's going to win this thing.
Part of my district is in the 6th Congressional District. Ossoff grew up in my district, and his parents live in my district. So those, you're right, those votes are very, very solid, highly energized, highly gender-based, and will come out efficiently, well, early.
I think Brian's right, too. If we're seeing a 4 or 5 or 6 point gap in the early voting, you think about the first round. Ossoff had a commanding, I think it was 60 plus.
Yeah, he had a huge lead early on April 18th.
So, granted, there's a lot more voters, and a lot of Republican voters who might otherwise vote on election day are simply going to be out of town. Same with Democratic voters, but there will be a lot more people. It's June, it's not April. There's a lot more people out and about than other parts of the year.
And I heard that a lot of Republican voters, you talk, we had 190 approximately in the first round. We're now looking up to 240, 250 in this round. That's a tremendous difference for a runoff when usually the runoff has a smaller turnout. But what I'm hearing from some Republicans is, look, I didn't vote the first time because I had too many choices. They're all telling me the same thing. They're all the same to me. And I just was going to wait and vote for the Republican the next round. And I think the bigger the turnout, the better it is for Karen Handel.
I tell you what, you guys are DeKalb and you're Fulton and such. I'm Cobb. I'm going to be watching East Cobb, and mm-hmm. I will tell you why. Because since 1983, Cobb County has been a thoroughly Republican county. There has been no reason to pick up a Democratic ballot in Cobb County. So you have all these people the stats are showing have Republican voting histories. And now they have a choice in a special election. And let's see if they are truly Republican or they have just been trying to go where the races are.
Rusty, you want to weigh in?
Yeah, let me weigh in on that because I agree with Brian to this point. There were a lot of Republicans who waited to see who the candidate was going to be. My sense is that Ossoff probably hit his high water mark in the first round. I mean, if you were motivated to vote for Ossoff, you were going to show up on that first round. So the fact that you had an increased amount of participation, I don't think that Ossoff can generate that much more. He got as much as he was going to get on the first round. This is all the Republicans, in my opinion, and we'll find out tomorrow night if I'm right, kind of saying, okay, we're going to get behind this person.
You know, Mary Margaret, what Rusty is saying, you don't agree with it. Let me set it up for you, though, by asking you a question. I've said a couple times, I think Ossoff came within 3,200 votes mm-hmm. of winning outright on April 18th. I've said a couple times on this show that I thought that DeKalb County officials were going to be kicking themselves because they chose not to open a broad number of early polling places as they would do in a regular election, a midterm election. You had to go down to their headquarters on Memorial Drive for most of the race. Assuming that DeKalb is, you know, was could have, it is conceivable if Democrats were voting early, DeKalb could have brought him awfully close to that number if they'd had more early voting, yes? Am I off base?
I think we're speculating beyond any way to measure what we're speculating about. But I'm going to come back to Jim's comment about East Cobb. Obviously, Cobb did not go Republican in the 2016 race for the first time. East Cobb is a turning over suburban, female, voter-dominated set of households. None of us know what's going to happen tomorrow. Yeah. This is absolutely too unique, too outside any border. The money is ridiculous. It's a fascinating example of politics, but is no measurable. No way to measure the shooting. No way to measure abortion. No way to measure whether that she's still against gay adoption.
Well, one of the things that will be interesting to watch, and Jim, you've brought this up on the show, is to some extent, this certainly is going to be a referendum on Donald Trump, and especially the one issue that Karen Handel embraced of the president's was the Republican health care rewrite. And as we said on the show the other day, as you pointed out, Trump undermined her by saying it was a mean bill last week. That could be, that not only could shape the race, it could send a national message if Ossoff wins tomorrow.
Oh, I think the victor of this race will determine where the Senate goes on the health bill. I truly
do. Yeah, it is an interest. The timing is fascinating. We'll know tomorrow night, and they're still working on that bill.
Yeah, and by the way, I mean, she's embraced not just, I mean, she's embraced pretty much all of his main central policies, whether it be the budget. She has some issues with the budget, but she endorsed it by and large, or his decision to pull out of the Paris Treaty, foreign policy. So she is, after keeping him sort of at arm's length in the first phase of the race, she has aggressively embraced him while also saying she won't be an extension.
Okay, the healthcare issue is the one that I hear most often. Yeah. It was the one that was really highlighted in the two debates. But let's play something, because for those people who believe that is a referendum to some extent on Donald Trump's popularity, Sonny Perdue made a nod in that direction at the rally at Peachtree DeKalb Airport the other day. It was really interesting. Let's listen.
I know some of you out there, some of you, some Republicans, may even be turned off by our president. And I don't think you are. I'm not, because let me tell you, I know it's hard. And let me just share, I was in Miami yesterday with him. The president keeps his promises.
Brian, Rusty, what an interesting comment for his Secretary of Agriculture to make about him.
Well, it's a practical statement. I mean, there's no question that Trump has polarized to some extent the political landscape. It was already polarized. It just kind of took another step further. This is one of the most interesting periods of American political history because of the polarization. People complain about Congress. I just tell you, look, it's the American people looking at themselves in the mirror, just like the Georgia General Assembly is the people of Georgia looking at themselves.
Yeah,
in the mirror.
I get the sense that if Sonny could have gone on that in that direction for another two or three sentences, he would have said that Republican control of Congress is at stake.
Yeah,
that's the real fight.
You know, I thought it was interesting. I was there. I know Mayor Paul was there and Greg was there, and it was quite a crowd for Saturday morning. And I had my 8-month-old daughter in my arms when he said that, and it is by the grace of God that I did not drop her on her head. I was so shocked to hear those words come out of his mouth. For a member of the Trump cabinet, which just last week had to sit there for a photo op where you had to talk about what an honor and privilege it is to serve his agenda, to say something so frank was startling. I applaud him for doing it, because that is what this campaign is about. Yeah. We can't get too cute. This is about white, college-educated, upper-income people who usually vote for Republicans not liking him.
And you get the last word before this break, Mary Margaret.
Sonny's photograph with your 8-month-old daughter was totally one of the nicest photographs I've seen of him in a long time. Congratulations. I was trying to imagine Sonny Perdue, what he really felt sitting at that table of cabinet members ordered to suck up to the president. I could not put that in my mind as to how he was dealing. And I'm convinced,
partly because he was so nice. That's not the Sonny Perdue that we all know.
Saturday morning's comment, in part, in my view, was him being forced to do that on national television.
Yeah. Real quick, because we got to get a break in, where will you be tomorrow night, Greg Bluestein? Are you going to be floating around?
Well, I'll be floating around through the day, and then I'll be at the Ossoff party at night.
All right. And so people will have updates on the GPB website, but you're going to be posting throughout the night, you and your team, I assume, on the AJC.com website.
The three of us will be having a live blog that will be starting, I think, early in the day.
Jim, you're not going out, I hope.
Well, I kind of think I am.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not 70 yet, like some people in this room.
Okay. All right, I get it.
But I haven't decided which way I'm going completely.
All right. Well, look, we're gonna conclude our conversation about one of the most fascinating congressional races I think any of us has ever seen. The votes tomorrow and Wednesday. We'll be back at 2, and we will break down how it turned out. So thank you for that part of the conversation. We are going to get a break in now. And when we come back, let's talk a little bit about an Atlanta guy, Jay Sekulow, who really made the rounds of the morning shows yesterday, talking about his new client, President Trump. And the message didn't go quite the way he hoped it would. We'll talk about that after a break.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Roxane Gay, author of Bad Feminist. She talks about her new memoir, Hunger, about her life being hundreds of pounds overweight. Gay says she started gaining weight after being gang raped when she was 12. She writes that she thought if she made herself repulsive, she could keep men away. Join us.
Listen to Fresh Air this afternoon at 3, right here on GPB.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. We've got to say goodbye to Brian Robinson because he's going over to do CNN. I just want you to remember, Brian, after tomorrow, we'll still want you all the time, and CNN won't care as much. So.
Well, that's true. And I want to say that where I'll be tomorrow is, I guess I'm one of those old Republican voters that Jim was talking about, because I am actually going to the polls tomorrow. Okay. I don't believe in early voting. Yeah. That's communist.
All right. Let's turn to Trump White House for a few minutes. And I want to say going into this that I'm bringing this up because it's interesting to hear what happened on the shows yesterday, but also because I want to ask this panel a question about whether or not we in the media are getting way ahead of ourselves in dealing with this special counsel investigation. So Jay Sekulow is, Jim, he's representing the president, and that's why he was on all the shows yesterday. And, of course, the question was, is the president under investigation? And he tried to answer that. We're going to play some of it in a minute. But first, he has deep roots here in Atlanta. He went to Lakeside High School.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think born in Brooklyn, but went to Lakeside High School here. Graduated from Mercer School of Law, just like Nathan Deal did. And he has been a long time associated with Ralph Reed and religious conservatism on the right side, and figured very big in at least, I think, the 2008 Mitt Romney presidential campaign.
Yeah, Greg, he was raised a pretty religious Jew in Brooklyn, and then here became a Messianic Jew later in his life. Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. And ended up, and I think that's what, after that, he sort of gravitated to Ralph Reed's 2006 campaign for lieutenant governor, I think, was where he really solidified his relationship with Ralph Reed.
All right, I'd like to play, it's a little longer clip, but not terribly long. He did Chuck Todd, he did Jake Tapper on CNN. I saw those interviews. And then I saw Chris Wallace talk to him on Fox. And I think it was Chris Wallace who really, really pressed him about this whole question of whether the president is or is not under investigation, because Sekulow said repeatedly he is not under investigation. Let's listen to one of the exchanges.
The president takes action based on numerous events, including recommendations from his attorney general and the deputy attorney general's office. He takes the action that they also, by the way, recommended, and now he's being investigated by the Department of Justice because the special counsel under the special counsel regulations reports still to the Department of Justice, not an independent counsel. So he's being investigated for taking the action that the attorney general and deputy attorney general recommended him to take by the agency who recommended the termination.
You've now said that he is being investigated after saying that you didn't.
No.
You just said,
no,
sir,
being
that he's being, you just said that he's being investigated.
No, Chris, I said that the anything, let me be crystal clear so you completely understand. We have not received nor are we aware of any investigation of the President of the United States.
Sir, you just said two times that he's being investigated.
No. The context of the tweet, I just gave you the legal theory, Chris, of how the Constitution works. If, in fact, it was correct that the president was being investigated, he would be investigating for taking action that an agency told him to take. So I do not appreciate you putting words in my mouth when I've been crystal clear that the president is not and has not been under investigation. I don't think I could be any clearer than that.
Well, you don't know that he's not under investigation again, sir. I mean,
I cannot read the mind. You're right, Chris. I can't read the mind of the special
prosecutor.
Okay,
so we're in agreement. You don't
but
know
I've
whether he's
notified.
You don't know whether
no
he's under
investigation.
This is like the funhouse mirrors that people who are dealing with the White House and having to defend the president now have to walk through.
I don't know what he's being paid there, but it's not
it's
enough.
It's not enough.
Yeah. Okay, so here's why I bring this up. I really want to go around the table, give everybody a chance to talk about this. That was a big story last night and this morning. Sekulow kind of getting tripped up, sort of admitting, yes, the president is under investigation. No, he's not. Here's my question. Is it time to take a deep breath, to wait and see what Robert Mueller in fact uncovers, and stop doing all this speculation on the front page of the Washington Post, the New York Times, here on Political Rewind, where we do it all the time, and put our focus back on things like, oh, say, healthcare, tax reform. I just am starting to feel a little uncomfortable with all of the ways in which we in the media are speculating about all this. I'd love to hear from our two political leaders and then hear from the reporters.
The speculation is wasteful of all our energy, but it's totally reflective of the president's own personality. He is putting those people out there to say ridiculous things, absolutely ridiculous things. And when I try to find commentators who are mainstream, who are giving me a balance of thought, and have to listen to ridiculous comments on either side, it irritates me and makes me more upset.
Yeah, Rusty, it seems in some ways that we're just too impatient, all of us. We somehow want to get to a conclusion on this when, in fact, it's going to be probably a year before the special counsel finishes.
Mueller hasn't even hired his entire staff yet he's already convicted people. That's the irony. And it's driven by the news cycle. I mean, you guys are in the news business. You know that used to you would write an article on Monday, it would be published on Tuesday, and you get some reaction. Now the reaction is instantaneous. You've got to be in the news cycle, and you've got to have something to say about everything, whether it's relevant or not. I mean, Jim and Greg had me and some other folks out at a panel they had last week, and the media. I'm a politician handicapped with a journalism degree, and so I have great respect for what journalists do. But we've lost a lot. We've lost a tremendous amount of editors used to sit and weigh stories and figure out whether they were relevant or not, whether they were factual or not. Check out the sources. And today, because of the pressure to respond instantaneously, that editorial filter is missing.
Well,
in so
I
much
want to be
media.
Clear that I think there's been some spectacularly good journalism practiced here, right? The war between the New York Times and the Washington Post has been great for America because it's revealed things about what's going on that we might not have learned if it weren't
yeah,
for some really
Bill,
solid
they keep having to apologize. They keep having to apologize for stories that they jumped the gun on that they would not
Rusty,
have published years ago.
I got to take issue with that.
I
can't
apology.
Think of a lot of apologies
have
that have gone out from
it's,
the Post.
To me, it's like watching a heavyweight bout. But I'd also add this in. When the most powerful and important person in the nation drives that story and tweets about it and admits he's under investigation, how do you not cover that? I mean, he tweeted about Handel this morning. That means that he sees this race as a referendum on him if he's personally getting involved in it. Beyond that, when he's tweeting about this whether he's getting investigated or not, it becomes a front page story.
And then as soon as a White House figure or maybe even a lawyer says, pay no attention to that tweet, pay attention to this letter over here, then you've got Sean Spicer saying, well, his tweets are formal statements by the White House.
Right.
His tweets speak for themselves, as he says.
It is mind-boggling to think that that's the world we're in. But, yeah.
I feel like it's a dilemma in some ways.
It is. Well, but I tell you what, we do have a wing of journalism that is chasing the tweets.
Yeah.
What you have to remember is that there were some very, very deep issues revealed by the 26th presidential campaign. And they go far beyond anything that is kind of churning through the social network right now. They are about who was a financial friend of Russia during a period. What do those accounts say? If there was a quid quo, what was it? There's a lot of numbers yet to roll out.
And those
out.
Are well, serious questions. Yeah. Those are serious questions you're saying.
Well, we've come a long way since Calvin Coolidge, who once said, I never got in trouble for something I didn't say.
By the way, speaking of something you don't say, Sean Spicer again today at the White House held what they call a gaggle, which is an informal gathering where reporters come together literally around the press secretary and ask him questions. No cameras were allowed. We haven't seen an on-camera press briefing in well over a week. And today, not only no cameras, no recordings. So reporters for electronic media could only report back from their notes. That, on the other side of this equation, is troubling in a different way.
Whether you're Sonny Perdue or whether you're Sean Spicer, going to work for President Trump, a reality star who most Americans do not believe is qualified to be president, is a highly difficult tightrope.
All right, we are out of time. I do want to share, Greg, you brought it up, and I meant to earlier. Here's what the Trump tweet was this morning. The Democrats want to stop tax cuts, good health care, and border security. Their Obamacare is dead with 100% increases in P's premiums. Vote now for Karen H. So the president did inject himself at the last minute in
just
this
like
thing.
He did in the first round too,
right? And we'll see if he has more to say as the voting begins tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. in the 6th congressional district. So thank you so much, Mayor Rusty Paul, State Representative Mary Margaret Oliver, and of course Jim Galloway and Greg Bluestein. You make the show a lot better by being here throughout the week. We're excited about tomorrow. Hope you are too. We'll report it all back to you on Wednesday's show, and of course you can follow it in the AJC tomorrow night as they look at the election returns as they come in. Just a reminder that you can subscribe to our podcast at iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts in case you miss the show and it's on the air. And as I said earlier, the AJC Political Insider will have the audio posted on their website, and that's as good a place to listen to it also. And remember, we're getting close. On Thursday, July 6th, we're going to be with you an additional day during the week, but we'll be there on Thursdays at 2 p.m. We'll present our show Two-Way Street, which is interviews with creative people, authors, artists, performers, chefs, musicians, telling good stories. So we hope you'll join us when Political Rewind and Two-Way Street are there for you on weekdays. I'm Bill Nigut. See you again on Wednesday. If you're in the 6th and haven't voted, go do it tomorrow.